Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke, the producer of The Roundtable on WAMC. Each weekday morning, WAMC's president and CEO and political observer Alan Chartok and Roundtable host Joe Donahue are joined by various experts, journalists, educators, and commentators to discuss current events. On Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review, we feature your favorite panelists discussing the most important issues of the past week, giving you a chance to catch up, ponder, or reconsider. This week started with a display of staggering generosity from WAMC listeners and members. On Monday, February 1st, Alan and Joe opened WAMC's lockbox and held the first and only on-air portion of this winter's WAMC Fund Drive. The outpouring was astounding, and the Fund Drive effectively began and ended in 2 hours, less than that with news breaks and a tiny amount of panel discussion with Lily Post, Sarah Rogerson, and Mike Spain. Thank you for showing up for WAMC. Tuesday's panelists were investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, and former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Monday was a party, Tuesday back to work, but first, some thanks from the boss.
This was an affirmation of everything that we as a community have tried to do with WAMC. It was just amazing, amazing. I got so many letters from friends who said, I can't believe it, a couple of hours, and you did it. Yeah. Well, no, we didn't do it. You did it out there, and we love you for it, and we're amazed, just amazed, and incredibly thankful for the way it went. We started yesterday at about the $700,000 mark. Is that right? About $700,000.
Yeah.
And that's because everybody was putting money into the lockbox all along. So if you want to get ready for the next one and you want to do something and you weren't able to do it during the fund drive, do it now. Go to WAMC.org and put it in. Every penny will go towards the next fund drive. And we really love you for that. Thank you.
All right, let's get started. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Well, the Republicans went to the White House yesterday, 10 of them anyway, and they had a meeting with the President of the United States, and it was a lengthy meeting on a coronavirus relief bill. The early word was, hey, these 10 senators said we want to basically do a package, but we want it to be about a third of what the $1.9 trillion package is that the president has proposed. The 10-member GOP group led by Susan Collins countered with $618 billion in her proposal, in their proposal, and appealed to Biden to make good on his campaign process promises to seek bipartisan unity. Following the Oval Office meeting, Collins told reporters outside the White House that Biden had explained his proposal more thoroughly, and they shared the same concerns about the impacts of the pandemic. It was a very good meeting and a very good exchange of views, I would say. I wouldn't say we came together on a package tonight. No one expected that in a two-hour meeting, Collins says. But what we did agree to do is follow up and talk further. Okay, so in D.C. speak, what does that mean, Alan?
Well, it means we have a president now who wants to extend to his colleagues on the other side of the aisle. He's a long-term senator. He's now a president. He says, come on in, we'll chat, we'll talk, and we'll all be nice to each other. And that's exactly what came out of it. Do I think that the president is going to give in and say, okay, I'll take a third of what I wanted? No. I think this is going to be a protracted negotiation. And I think in the end, the figure will be closer to that of the Democratic president, who has the votes, after all, in the Senate, with the exception of Joe Manchin from West Virginia. And that's going to be a tough one. They sent Kamala Harris to talk in West Virginia, and he took that as a personal affront. Hey, you don't come into my state and give a speech about your thing.
Yeah.
In any case, he's watching his own behind, which is, of course, what the Republicans have been doing all along with their base. So we criticize the Republicans for not being patriotic enough to know what's up. But Joe Manchin certainly should come in for an honorable mention. On the other hand, the split in the Senate is now 50-50. So you don't want to give up that seat to a Republican because Manchin went too far left.
And Rosemary, it didn't seem like Manchin really, he seemed like he was more upset that the vice president came in and spoke than he was about the actual substance, which he doesn't seem to disagree with all that much.
Well, this is all about power, I think. And Manchin is relishing the role. I think Susan Collins is, too. They were on the outs not too long ago, and now they are major players. They are moderates from their parties, and they're forming a new force to be reckoned with. And I think we see that in this march with a plan to the Oval Office. So for Kamala Harris to come in, and really, really, it was stupid. I'm sorry. It was stupid. If you're the Democratic vice president, you don't go into a state without letting the Democratic senator know about it. Why didn't you try to bring him with him? It was a dumb move, not very important in the overall scheme, but I can see why he was annoyed. And again, it's about he and Manchin and Collins have become extraordinarily important because there is such a small voting margin that if either of them move, it switches everything. And that's where we are now. I hope that the president will do a serious negotiation and move. It would be it would still get a stimulus package going, even if it isn't as big as he originally envisioned. And it would be a true movement on his pledge to try to bring about true unity.
Where would you like him to go in terms of making a deal, Rosemary?
Well, I mean, that's really hard to say because it isn't just – I can't just say one number. If he went down on the number but he moved where the money was going, that would be okay. I've long said I was in favor of not giving money to people like me and others who don't really need it. I think that's something that they could give up on easily and would still do a lot of good. So I do think there's room for negotiation, and I think that the president should take this as an opportunity to deliver on a promise. The Republicans are bashing him over the head every time they disagree with him. They go, oh, you talked about unity. Well, this is an actual move towards bipartisanship, and I think he should take advantage of it. I hope he will.
In 2 years, the Republicans, if history is any guide, may end up running the Senate. So it's a good thing to sort of set some stuff up now.
It does seem like the issue for the wiggle room, though, it could be, we don't know this, but it could be the $15 minimum wage. That's one place where they could discuss. Judy, your thoughts?
You know, I thought the Oval Office meeting last night was very good optics for the president. It shows that he's meeting with Republicans, and I think that's what it was all about, optics. He's got some wiggle room also in the fact that the unemployment benefits don't expire until March, so he's got some time. But this idea that they're only talking about a 3-month extension of the unemployment benefits is a real issue. I agree with Rosemary. I think that if you target the stimulus checks to really people who need them, I think you'll gain broader support among the populace with this. I think in the end, though, the Democrats have the advantage because Republicans are going to be put in the position of voting against a package that will provide relief to the America that will, you know, to help vaccinate people, to help reopen schools, to give people who are hungry more food. I think it's hard to argue against this. I understand where they're coming from in pushing for some restraint in terms of the targeted aid. But, again, I think the Democrats are holding almost all the cards.
And they have an advantage in that they are holding the cards. They got a Democratic president, Judy, and they have the number of votes they need in order to get over. So at least it would seem so. Without Manchin, that's going to be a tougher one. But yes, they're coming from a very stronger place. But what about 2 years from now? That's the issue.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think the big difference, aside from the dollar amount, which is pretty extraordinary, is that the Republican plan doesn't have a cent in there for state and local governments. The Democrat plan has $350 billion. And even West Virginia's own governor, Jim Justice, who's a Republican, by the way, he wants a larger coronavirus package. He really, he says they need to go big. Absolutely believe that we need to go big, he said. So that's going to put pressure on Manchin in West Virginia to come through. And so I agree. I think there's going to be a lot of compromise. I don't think Biden wants to spend all his political capital the way that Obama had to get the Affordable Care Act through in the first months of his presidency. He wants to have something he can bank with. And you know, one of the Republican senators said that Biden just looked really happy negotiating and talking about compromise. I mean, it is something that he pledged. And if he just rams it through without much change, it's going to, I think, leave a bad taste. And it's not going to bode well for getting other things through. So, you know, compromise seems to be in the air. I just don't think it's going to be a very big compromise because Chuck Schumer's never going to let it go through without substantial money to state and local governments.
All right. The other thing here, too, is that meanwhile, TikTok, people need the help, right? So we've seen this how many times. So when do we have to get moving here and help people? Because that's what this is supposed to be all about. We hope that's what it's all about. There was a package right before the president went into office. And so... And it's also going to be an ongoing problem, Mike. We talked about this yesterday. I mean, if you do a smaller package and then you come back however many months later, this isn't anything that's going to go away anytime soon, right?
Right. But one of the observations that many have made is that if you just sit around and wait to see how well the last plan worked, by the time you realize it didn't, it's too late. You have to really get out in front of this. You really have to get out in front of it, and you have to be ready to go big. And I think that Biden wants to do that, too. He was elected to make a major reversal in the way that the government responds to things. And if he goes big and they are able to get a big plan through, maybe not $1.9 trillion, but close, and it succeeds, it's going to do a lot to help people kind of restore their faith in that government action really does work. And that's a major, major shift over what's going on now, and it would really it would help things in 2 years and 4 years, and not just have another flip back to the way things were 4 years ago.
And Alan, if he leaves the Republicans behind and says, "Okay, I've got the votes, I'm just going to go ahead and do it," how costly is that, given what Mike just said?
Well, it depends whether he really has the votes. If he really has the votes, if they can convince Manchin, for example, I don't think it'll matter. Look. Donald Trump was not a guy who played nicey-nicey. He did not. No. And he left a residue of, this is the way it is, I'm a tough guy. I'm a tough guy and I'm going to get it done. But tough guys, you know, Biden has a way of making it clear that he's a nice guy. There are contemporary politicians of all stripes on all levels of government, that's a hint, who could take a lesson from that.
I think Alan's on the right track here. The tough guy image is one of the reasons that Trump lost to Biden, who's especially a good guy. And I think he needs to make a real faith effort here to reach a compromise. And that is no mean feat because he wants to go big. He thinks that Obama made a mistake in his first outing, not going big enough. So that's his inclination, which puts him in the progressive and Bernie camp. And Republicans are pulling him the other way. So it will be a feat for him to pull this off. But this is exactly why the man was elected. So this is a test, and everybody's watching.
George writes to us and says, Pete Buttigieg said at one of the debates that he would tour the states to make his case. This may be the new MO with this administration. President Joe, I'm sure, gave his blessings for Kamala. See, now these are listeners writing Joe and Kamala, so please don't take this out on us. To go to West Virginia, Manchin may just be posturing for some reason. Mike says this is classic Craigslist negotiation. Biden posts high, Republicans counter low, and they meet somewhere in the middle. Kate says, I agree with Rosemary that Biden should decrease his proposal a bit and massage categories of directed funds, minimum wage, etc. Could Dems also throw into the mix of negotiating tools the punishment of Marjorie Taylor Greene by the GOP as a quid pro quo?
Yeah,
then Schumer wouldn't have to overstep to remove her from committees. Well, Schumer wouldn't be doing that, but
no.
Yes.
No, in fact, first of all, Schumer is in the Senate. She's
right.
In the House.
Yes.
But secondly, just so that everybody knows, the person who assigns to the committee is of the same party. So in this case, it would be McCarthy. And if putting it mildly, he's a real stinker. Of course he puts her on the Education Committee, which is a coveted position.
Well, notably, the House Rules Committee, which is run by the Democrats, run by Jim McGovern, who you talk to all the time.
I do.
Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful guy.
His committee has the right to revoke that because the Democrats are in the majority, and that may come down to it. But my sense is that McCarthy will have to do it himself. We'll get there.
I'm not so sure because McCarthy doesn't want to be trumped here. He doesn't want them yelling at him.
McCarthy is weak.
Yeah, but how so?
He is a weak man. He changes his mind. He sways. He has just no moral compass. I mean, if he were evil, you could sort of respect that, as I do with McConnell, who knows what he's doing. But that guy just twists in the wind. And I think it is a really difficult decision for the Democrats, because there's no question that she should be removed. She is a threat and a danger. It's horrifying that the people of Georgia put her in office. I understand she had no opponent. I'd rather have no one than her. But if she is removed by action of the Democratic majority, then they do open themselves up to the next time. AOC would be under threat in 2 years if as patterns in the past prove, still hold, and the ruling party is thrown out of the majority in the House. AOC or any of the squad could be in danger from a Republican action. That's just a terrible thing to start. And this is not someone that there should be this argument about. Why is there not a unified action to get rid of this? Absolutely. Oh, she's wacky.
I can't get enough of the story.
Jewish lasers? Come on.
Joe, so, what were you saying, Joe?
I said I can't get enough of this story. I hate it, but I can't get enough of it because everything that they'll say, oh, this is new tape that has been unveiled, and you watch it and you're like, oh my God, that happened, huh? So Robert said,
I want to comment on that if I can.
Yes.
So you are absolutely right. I can't get enough of the story, Joe Donahue. Now, the answer is we could get enough of the Trump story and he's out. Think about that. This idiot, this woman, she's as bad as they come. The fact that she's there, I think in a way helps the Democrats because it shows everybody who these people really are.
Yeah. Well, and that they're because as Rosemary said, and the whole thing with Kevin McCarthy, his announcement that, well, I have to sit down and have Jed Clampett talking to Jethro and the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, someday I have to have a long talk with that boy. And yet this has been going on for, 2 weeks? And they still haven't had a conversation yet? They're waiting to get back in Washington? Phones? I don't know. That's ridiculous to me. The letter I was going to read is from Robert, who said, how did Marjorie Taylor Greene find out about our Jewish space laser? Does she also know that our giant remote controlled matzo ball can cause issues too?
So this whole thing is so good for the Democrats. The more exposed these it's more than Marjorie Taylor Greene. This morning, the Democratic National Committee unveiled a $500,000 campaign, and the slogan is, they're with Q, not with you. The Democrats can use this. They can take this to the bank in 2 years. I think this is going to be the demise of the Republican Party, unless people like this congressman from Illinois, this Adam Kinzinger, can do something to save it by putting some reason back in Republican parties. But for now, hey, let her keep talking. It's bad for democracy, but great for the Democratic Party, apparently.
And I'm with you, Judy. I really am.
Well, I want to say that I think that there's tons of jokes, and you can sort of see why, on Jewish lasers and all that. But under that, not very deep under that, is a current of anti-Semitism that is dangerous and needs to be denounced. The Nazis said outrageous things about Jews, and then what happened after that? There's a reason that these tropes work in QAnon as well. Those are also deeply anti-Jewish. That is so, so dangerous. And it's one of the reasons that she needs to be removed. And this, we have to do a lot of educating of our students. This is crazy stuff.
And when you say needs to be removed, what do you want to, how do you want to remove her?
I want McCarthy to do it, but I don't think that's going to happen. I would like fellow Republicans in the House to just say, no, she does not represent us. But
well, they won't
if I were the Democrats, I'd remove her even at the possible future cost of Republicans trying to remove some Democrats. And I would be working hard as hell, which I hope that Stacey Abrams and Jamie Harrison are doing, to make sure that in 2 years we don't have a turnover of power to the other party.
Rosemary Armeo on the Roundtable Panel on Tuesday, February 2nd. This is Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. I'm producer Sarah LaDuke. Please note as you listen, any given topics, details, and facts may have changed and evolved since the panels took place live earlier in the week. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke. In addition to Alan Shartok and Joe Donahue, Wednesday's panelists were Rosemary Armeo, Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, and Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin.
There's a lot going on here, but obviously one of the big stories is the rift in the GOP. We've been talking about this aspect of the story, or several aspects of this overall story, for several days, and that is, what do you do with a quote-unquote nutty House member, and how big is the rift in the GOP? So we spoke about this yesterday, but there were meetings that took place last night with Senate Minority Leader House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who met with Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia to work on the great concern that many have within the party and certainly without, of her comments that, again, have been called nutty, loony, and those words from Republicans. So what to do with her? And then, oh, by the way, what do you do with Liz Cheney, the number three House GOP leader who dared to vote against, who voted last month to impeach Donald Trump? So, and then the concern being, are you harsher on Liz Cheney than you are on Marjorie Taylor Greene? And this seems to be dividing many Republicans and is a source of great consternation. Now, the meeting took place yesterday, last night. It went very long, and we are told there will be another meeting today and some decision will be made. But it is interesting that this is taking so long. Alan, what can you read political tea leaves when it takes so such a long time to yank off the Band-Aid?
Yeah, I really can. I think I can. Look, they're in a hole, the Republicans. They have Trump, who individually is extraordinarily popular with his base. It's always been so. They're afraid of losing power. They're on their way out. And they don't know what to do, because if they vote with their own eyes, they were there when the hordes came into the Capitol. they're watching the dead police officer who did his job and was killed for it. And yet they want to stay in office. It's that simple. So they vote not with their eyes, not with their hearts. They vote politically so that Trump won't come after them and give them a primary run for their money. It's that simple. There are times to stand up in America, and this is one of them. And these people will forever be seen as being of selling out their country and eschewing patriotism. And I want to hear what Rosemary has to say.
I don't know that there's anything simple about that, although much of what Alan says is correct. The difference between Cheney and Green, I think, is immense. One is saying nutty things, and everyone, even the Republican team, agreed that she's nutty. Liz Cheney is just saying things that some Republicans don't want said in public. That seems like a different offense. And she would not be expunged or taken off of a committee. She would just lose her leadership position. So the punishment's not exactly the same. This is a problem for the Republican Party because it is itself divided. There are many members who think both of those women are correct. So how do you reconcile it? Because there's nothing reconcilable between the two positions.
Chris Churchill, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with most of what has been said. I mean, Alan is exactly right that they are, a lot of the Republicans are in this kind of difficult spot where there's this group within their party that has been not only taken by Trump, but taken by things like QAnon and conspiracy theories and all sorts of things. And it's, I don't know how many people it is, but it's enough to sway a primary. And so they're afraid to alienate that group of people. But meanwhile, the party's just going to get killed in the suburbs if they don't kind of marginalize, you know, the conspiracy theories and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I mean, the mainstream of the country is going to continue to be repelled by this the way that they were repelled by the Capitol attack. You know, and Alan is right. The right thing to do is pretty clear. You marginalize, you say the conspiracy theories, you call them out for what they are, which is, you know, big lies. And you move on and maybe take your lumps in the next election. But, you know, politicians are never inclined to do that.
Bob Griffin.
Several thoughts. One, we haven't mentioned the fact that, as if I'm correct, Liz Cheney is the most senior female leader in the GOP. And I find it fascinating the way that the wing is going after her. But there's a pattern here. There's a pattern with the GOP and strong women that I think would be remiss if we didn't raise as an issue. When you start to think about Green, you have to be honest about the far right wing of the GOP party, because it's not just her. You know, you think about Gates, you think about Gohmert, you think about, you can just go through the list. Frankly, I don't even understand how these people get elected to office. I mean, given their views and given their backgrounds and given their moral turpitudes, I frankly don't understand how they could be elected to any position. With that said, you know, Cheney stood up and voted the way she believed, and she showed a degree of political courage that frankly we have come to not expect from DC. And I'm not a huge Liz Cheney fan, but at the same time, I admire the fact that she is willing to stand up and put the nation first. One note that I'll make, and it was a comment that it was reading Mitch McConnell's comment. You know, he talked about, you know, the loony wing and that the Republican Party can't handle this. That this isn't good for the Republican Party. But it just goes to show you, I mean, it's not good for the nation. And the nation should have been the first thing he talked about, not the Republican Party.
So, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, to Bob's point, the optics of punishing Liz Cheney for her vote of conscience and then basically accepting what Marjorie Taylor Greene is pitching, it would just be terrible. I mean, it's politically terrible, for one thing, but more than that, it would be morally terrible.
And Joe, if I could jump in, you know, it's very interesting. What's developing right now is this weird defense about freedom of speech. And if we talk about, you know, the impeachment, you know, the argument that it's First Amendment rights, and with Corrine, it's her First Amendment rights. But what you start to see, though, is that it's not First Amendment rights for everybody. You know, there's an interesting article out of Florida where, you know, there was a dueling Black Lives Matters and Proud Boy demonstrations, and the Black Lives Matter people were arrested and the Proud Boys weren't. You know, so you're starting to see sort of a redefinition among the GOP of what really is a core freedom.
Well, that's a false argument anyway.
It's not definition. It's just opportunism. It's just lawyers will get in there and use freedom of speech or narrow interpretations of the Constitution because it suits their very weak political case. We're seeing that in the impeachment brief that was turned in for Trump. That was his what he felt was true, even though it can't be provable. It wasn't a lie for him to say it, and he has the right to say it anyway. I mean, come on, that's not redefining a right. That's using a really stilted definition of a right that everyone is supposed to have.
Okay, let me push back respectfully.
Let Bob push back, and then I want to hear from Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, if the party accepts this as a party norm, then it is a redefinition. Okay, the fact that the party, the Republican Party, the GOP, is not repudiating that position means that that's what they stand for. So it may be semantics, but it's a really important semantic.
Chris.
Yeah, the point I was going to make is that, you know, the free speech argument to me is always dubious. I mean, nobody is saying that Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't have the right to say what she wants to say, but there have always been consequences for the things that people say, and there always will be. I mean, no one's saying the government should imprison her for the things she says. Nobody is saying that she doesn't have the right to say them, or at least most people aren't saying that. But it doesn't mean you can just say whatever you want and then continue to be a respected member of Congress. There are consequences for things that people say. There always have been, and there always should be.
Rosemary?
Well, yeah, I don't think they have any real thought or feeling or even care about a constitutional right to freedom of speech. I think it's a short-term political argument. And Bob is right, though. This is a matter of semantics. It will not be up to them and how this matter in Congress is resolved that will decide the First Amendment. That's something that's going to be hashed out by us, by courts, by groups like Black Lives Matter, who are all going to press freedom of speech to the hilt, as, you know, Marjorie Greene is.
Alan?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about what happens when all of this arrives at the Supreme Court. If it arrives at the Supreme Court. Spate of articles yesterday about Clarence Thomas's wife being a huge purveyor of Trumpism in the country. And, you know, we expect our congresspeople to stand up. We expect the Republicans to stand up right now and to say this is just garbage. What this woman is doing, we have to kick her out. We have to do whatever we have to do, and yet, we have the same kinds of problems on the Supreme Court of the United States, which so far has been stepping up, doing what they should be doing for the most part when it comes to Trump. He's not the president anymore. I think they think they can. They know their own personal reputations are at stake, forever. It's to me. I just shake my head, gang, and say, how the heck did we get here? Yeah. How did we get a bunch of losers in the United States Congress who have forgotten their oath of office, who have forgotten the Constitution of the United States, and say that self-perpetuation is more important than any of that? It's really awful.
Gerrymandering.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a very long and sword story, if you really want to think about it. I mean, it's been manipulation of the districts. It's been a push to both wings. And this isn't just a GOP issue. I think this is a problem with the whole way the primaries are set up, is that the primaries support support positions that are more extreme, because that's where the wings are, and the wings typically come out to vote. So there's an awful lot tied up in here. But Alan, you're onto something that, you know, sort of the noble following of public service is something that has, that appears to be lost by many members of Congress. And it's time for the voters to, you know, to continue what they started in November and staying involved and making sure that we're putting people into office and at all levels of government that really represent what we stand for.
I think the Republicans are, all of their concern now about Green and Cheney and McConnell and impeachment, it's all looking for 2 years from now in the midterms. They have begun mobilizing and getting their ducks in a row. And the liberals, the Democrats, ought to be doing the same. There's no question. And as for the Supreme Court, it will be. I hope it does go to the Supreme Court, because there's nothing that has been as protected in the Constitution as far as a right for Americans and the right to political discourse. And these debates right now, Green and Trump inciting or not inciting, those are political discourse that affects people in a violent way. Those are cases we have not seen adjudicated before. I wish it were a different Supreme Court adjudicating it, but they will be extremely interesting. Originalists who should see the absolute nature of that First Amendment confronting an attack on the Capitol.
I'm not clear what constitutional questions the Supreme Court would decide in all this. I mean, I know that there's the thing that they're likely to hear is whether or not you can impeach somebody or convict somebody once they've left office. That might go to the Supreme Court. But none of these other questions, I mean, there's really no constitutional questions. These are just political questions, or am I missing something?
Well, one of the problems is that you're asking a question to someone whose phone line just dropped out. So yeah. We will. But if Bob wants to answer them, that's fine.
If I could, because it's really interesting, Chris, and I like your perspective and Alan's perspective.
Wait a second. Are you answering as Bob or answering as Rosemary?
I think
Rosemary is here, but go ahead.
Did you hear Chris's question to you?
No, but I'll figure it out when I hear Bob support him. So this is shaping into an argument of several against one. So that's okay.
That's how I feel.
If it's us against you, we lose. So I'm not even going to go there. You know, it's this really interesting argument that I think that I do think could end up in the Supreme Court. And it's this argument that the president can't be charged because he's no longer president, right? And that the impeachment is because constitutional issues. So if that's the case, could he be charged as a private citizen for sedition?
Go ahead, Rosemary.
We talked about that on the roundtable the other day. That is indeed an interesting issue. Mm-hmm. And it would require not only probably a ruling by the Supreme Court, but a prosecutor game enough to try a criminal charge against an ex-president in the face of a new administration that does not want to go backward. But that's not the constitutional issue I was talking about. I wanted to talk about free speech, which has not been, or freedom of the press, freedom of speech. This has not been before the Supreme Court in quite some time. But established precedent is so strong in favor of political discourse. This court, over the years, not just any one court, not the Trump court, but all the courts, have strongly ruled that people in America are mostly allowed to say whatever they want about their government. They've even dumbed down and weakened hate speech, saying that, no, unless you actually have a clear danger, you can even say hateful things in the name of political discourse. So here, if they went and this free speech of the president, his First Amendment rights or Green's, is adjudicated, it would be really interesting because it's both a clear and present danger, you could argue, and a violation of their First Amendment rights to shut them up. So that's what I'm talking about. It's all hypothetical at this point, of course.
So, Chris, did that answer the question you were asking?
Yeah, somewhat, although I just don't see how that would end up before the Supreme Court exactly, because they're not being – no one's prosecuting these people for the things that they said. These aren't constitutional questions yet. These are just political questions. I mean, whether or not she should be censored by the House or kicked off committees or all these various things, these are just political – the government has not taken Green into custody for the things she said, or Trump or anybody else. To me, I don't see the constitutional issue here.
Her lawyers could certainly argue that, but if she is censored or if the president is punished because of what he said, that's certainly an action taken against them for political speech, and it could at least be raised as a possible case for the Supreme Court. I don't think there's anything that requires that the punishment be, you know, imprisonment.
Well, Congress people have been punished for the things they say forever. I mean, Ilhan Omar was censored not too long ago for things that she said. I mean, that there's nothing new about that. And, you know, if Trump is convicted on this impeachment trial for what he said, I guess I got to lost my train of thought a little bit on this, but that's a political process. It's not the government silencing anybody.
Chris Churchill on the Roundtable Panel on Wednesday, February 3rd. This is Roundtable Panel of the Week in Review. I'm Roundtable producer Sarah LaDuc. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel of the Week in Review. I'm still Sarah LaDuc. On Thursday, February 4th, Alan Chartok and Joe Donahue spoke once again with Mike Spain, and with Cohoes City Director of Operations Teresa Bourgeois, and Tetherless World Professor of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences at RPI, and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler.
Marjorie Taylor Greene and her past remarks on conspiracy theories and violence were denounced by House Republican Kevin McCarthy. But she was not removed, at least by McCarthy, from the jobs that he gave her, the roles that he gave her on two committees. So that then turns and forces a vote today for the entire House to decide. And then McCarthy criticized Democrats for forcing the vote over removing her from congressional committees because it's their fault that they were upset that she was crazy. I don't know. Then the other part of this, of course, was Liz Cheney, who had the audacity to vote for the articles or to support impeachment. And also her concern over the insurrection on January 6th, and she was, after being she kept her leadership post yesterday. So, but the big news will be the vote today. And maybe I'm reading this wrong, Alan. You help me here as a political scientist. But if you're the Democrats, sure, maybe Kevin McCarthy is blaming you for forcing the vote. But it wouldn't have been forced had he done his job, number one. And number two, now Democrats are given this gift of, for all of the Republicans that they have to run against in 2 years, to have them on record of how and if they support this woman who has just said the nuttiest of things.
Well said, Joe. That's exactly right. Look, I keep thinking of what nickname. I like to give nicknames to people, and I'm wondering about McCarthy. he could be Edgar Bergen's dummy, known as Charlie.
Charlie McCarthy. I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
The name connection, I got it.
Because sitting on Trump's knee, you know what I mean? Or he could be called a faux Solomon because he, you know, talking about cutting the baby in half. So, you know, I don't. He gives something to both of those people. Obviously, Liz Cheney is to be respected for what she did here, and might be turn out to be one of the saviors of the Republican Party, because there are some sane people in the Republican Party if they can get it back to where it once was. In the meantime, Trump's numbers among Republicans are going down precipitously. I read a poll just showing that going through the floor. And that is really fascinating to me. So McCarthy, he's worried about survival, his own personal survival, his leadership of his conference, and yet he really is powerless to do anything that will save them the way that he's going now. How do you say anything good, or how do you support the continuation of a woman who's an outright anti-Semite, who is really saying that the parents of those children who were slaughtered, you know, that it was that it never happened, that 9/11 never happened. I mean, this is really a wacko of the first order, and the fact that he has to defend her and others have to defend her tells you too much about who they are.
Well, I thought one of the most offensive parts of Kevin McCarthy's remarks last night was the butchering of Charlie, of the butchering of the name of QAnon, of like, I've never even heard of this. I don't know what this is. And, you know, I talked to her for an hour. She didn't mention anything about space lasers. Come on. You know, I mean, really. The ignorance of not even knowing. I'd be more worried if that were even true, that he didn't know what was going on and hadn't picked up a paper in a really long time. Teresa Bourgeois, what do you make of all this?
I think it's a reminder of the pretty serious cultural problems we have right now, these deep, deep divides. I was reading, you know, some of the tweets about what happened, and one of the members of Congress described the situation with Congresswoman Cheney as facing, quote-unquote, 4 hours of blistering criticism, and that she didn't yield an inch, but 4 hours of blistering criticism. On the other hand, there are reports that Congresswoman Green, you know, was applauded. And so what's happening in our country, or
by the way,
with the Republican...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but literally applauded, right? I mean, literally applauded. Yes, go ahead.
So Congresswoman Cheney, who, let's remember what she did. She supported the peaceful transfer of power, right? She supported the peaceful transfer of power and supported the free, you know, the elections in our country. And she gets blistering criticism. Congresswoman Green, we know all of the things, and she gets the applause. And so how does that happen? How does it happen that 60 people, yes, Cheney prevailed, but 60 people voted against her. 60 members of Congress voted against the person who supported the peaceful transfer of power. We have to understand how that happens, and my concern is that we have a real problem in this country with disinformation.
Right.
And that is causing serious, I mean, this is not news, but problems for our democracy.
And
so, yes, I mean, Kevin McCarthy's just doing what he does to try to save his leadership position and shift the focus to the Democrats. But we have a much bigger cultural problem that needs to be focused on.
And I don't, I agree with everything you just said, but just for a note, that vote was a secret ballot. So those people can go under the cover of darkness.
You said people, you mean cowards.
Yes, I did mean cowards. Mike,
what does it say when you...
But
Alan, what does it say when 60 people voted where, you know, their vote was not going to be public, and yet they still voted against Liz Cheney?
Well, it means a couple of things. One, it may mean that they actually believe it, which I find personally hard to believe. And another is that they are the kinds of political prostitutes that we know all too well, will do anything to cover their butts so that they can survive. That's what that's all about. You know, the idea that they actually believe it is so hard for me personally to get.
Jim Henler, go ahead.
So, you know, I think there's some really interesting things. I've been trying to dig into some of the underlying data and things like that. You know, one of the things that I found interesting, and Alan, you may know more about this than I do, if you look at fundraising patterns and things like that, you know, we've always said that the Democrats are more like a set of different parties, where the Republicans were a little more monolithic. You know, what I realize is Democratic fundraising is coming in much larger, smaller pieces these days. And Republican fundraising still includes a lot of very big chunks from PACs and things. So I have a feeling that the Republicans as a party are more challenged by when they're not seen as a monolithic party than the Democrats who've lived that way. And I think what we're seeing is an interesting trend where the Democrats now have to pull together because of the small majorities they have. And the Republicans are sort of having this split that they're going to have to work out in this sort of polarized space, because they're going to sort of have to figure out where the money's going. So I think in a real politic way, there's something very interesting playing out here that's going to have some long-term implications.
I would also point out to your very good point, in addition, money tends to follow two things. Fear, right? I mean, people were really scared to death about what this country was coming to, and the Democrats were making huge inroads into fundraising. We know that. Even with the big guys doing what they were doing or not doing what they were doing. So that's one thing. But money also tends to follow power. And right now, all the power is in two houses of the Congress and a president.
Right.
And so that makes sense also.
Mike Spain.
Well, okay. Well, I was going to say, I read that I'm talking about Green, raised $110,000 in one day this week. Money is pouring into her also. And although she isn't speaking to what we regard as the establishment press, she did talk to the Washington Examiner, and she said that the Republicans and the establishment Republicans and the Democrats in Congress are no different. She was eager to bring more action-oriented people to Congress like her. And, you know, that's scary. She's kind of leading this new insurgent Republican area, you know, group that is apparently gaining some steam. But I just want to say about Cheney's vote. Yeah, 60 people did vote against keeping Cheney as the leader when it was a secret ballot, and that is disturbing. But 145 Republicans voted to keep her, and that's a sizable majority. And it does show that more Republicans are closer to the mainstream. They're just afraid to say it in public. And today, we may see that when they have to vote on whether to, you know, strip Green from her committee assignments, because that's going to be an open vote. And you're right, Joe. I mean, it's going to become material in 2 years when every one of those congressmen run for reelection.
2 years is a long time, Mike.
Well, but how can you be on it?
Hold on. Go ahead, Mike.
Sorry.
No, it is and it isn't. That's all. I mean, you know, 2 years can go by quickly. Already,
yes.
The campaign is underway.
Right. The ads have already started. I mean, the negative ads have already started by the Democrats looking to, you know, of including that vote. Teresa, you were going to say, I'm sorry.
Mike, how can she serve on the House Education Committee, given what she has said about school shootings?
Oh, I agree with you completely. That's preposterous. And there was a negotiation going on with Steny Hoyer, you know, who's like the whip for the Democrats in the House, where she would be assigned to some labor committee or something, or, you know, some benign committee where she'd be sorted out of the way. And Democrats wouldn't allow it. They really want the Republicans to do this. And Alan, you said the other day, and I agree, you know, it's risky for the Democrats to strip a Republican from a committee assignment, because it could come back to haunt them, just the way that ending the filibuster for judges came back to haunt them with the Supreme Court appointments. You know, so it's, you know, you got to think down the road. And yet, if somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene can keep her position on the Education Committee after calling what happened in Parkland a false flag. And
yeah, you know, I was going to say, I thought what Mike was saying was very interesting, in part because it was the dinner table argument between my wife and myself last night. And,
Mike was there. He's everywhere.
Yeah, she actually won. So,
well, that's good to know.
I mean, I was kind of making the real politic argument that, you know, what happens in 2 years if the Republicans take it out and, you know, they'll go after AOC and others. And, you know, my wife convinced me that, yes, but, you know, you can't leave somebody like this on the Education Committee. You can't give this person the megaphone. And, you know, she's right. There's got to be a line somewhere. Otherwise, we just stay on these sort of slippery slope arguments saying you can never censor someone. You can never do this. You can never do that. And I think, you know, in this case, it's so egregious. Of course, my whole thing, all my Twitter and Facebook feeds are filled with space laser jokes. So, you know, Jewish space laser was one of her crazy conspiracy theories. So, you know, it's you can treat her as a laughing matter. But what my wife really pointed out to me was it's not a laughing matter. This is a person who, you know, on the Ed Committee would actually have some power over some of these things.
Right.
And, you know, the Republicans, it was a very in-your-face move to put her on that committee.
The question, of course, is what the Democrats choose to do with this. This is a great gift. She's a great gift to the Democrats. No question in my mind about that. Now, if they threw her out of the place, it would be a terrible error. But taking the committees away, I'm not sure about that. I'm going to stop right there.
Well, see, I don't think it's a gift, Alan, because, I mean, I think this is a, you know, first of all, it's a distraction from what they need to be talking about, but it's a critical distraction because we have to address these issues. And I think that she is, you know, they can't let her stay on the committee, but she's also threatened the speaker. And so some of the Republicans say, well, these were words that were spoken prior to her becoming a member of Congress, so you're going to be held accountable for what you've previously said. Well, she has not only not refuted that, she has doubled down on saying she stands by what she says. But the question is, Jim, you spoke about the fact that, you know, this is a very polarized space. How did it get this way? How did we get to the point where there is, you know, support for 60 people think it's appropriate for them to vote this way against our democracy and applaud her? And I'm really concerned about disinformation in this country and how that's being fostered and what we can do about that. There's an interesting op-ed in the New York Times recently by Shoshana Zuboff, I don't know if I'm saying her name correctly, but about the age of surveillance and how the amassing of information is used not only to predict behavior but to influence it. And how is micro-targeting influencing people's behavior and building up support for groups like QAnon, and that's just, it's not based on any fact, but it's gaining strength, or for building support for people like her. This is a deep-seated problem in our country.
Joe, write a reply, like it or not. Let me just say, Teresa, I just don't want anybody putting, and I think in some way you did that, putting words in my mouth as a support for Marjorie Taylor Greene. That is not the case.
Oh, no, I don't think you would support for a nanosecond, Alan.
No. But I do think the Democrats are going to make hay out of this. Look, we have a by-election coming up in which the Democrats, as you know better than anybody having worked in Congress, are really slated to lose. They are, because it's a by-election and because that's what happens when a president goes into power. Usually people cover their butts the next time. So I'm just simply saying the Democrats are going to use this like crazy, and they should.
Alan Chartok on the Roundtable panel on Thursday, February 4th. Full episodes of the Roundtable panel are available online at wamc.org/roundtable. You may contact us by emailing roundtable@... you guessed it, WAMC.org. This has been this week's Roundtable Panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Thank you for listening.